Hello, I'm here during the lunch rush with Janice, who owns her own food truck.
Best cheesesteaks in town.
Janice traded up to Geico Commercial Auto Insurance for her food truck business. We're here where she needs us most.
They sure are.
We make it so easy for her to save, with customised coverage that grows with her business. Sorry, I just get so emotional talking about saving folks money.
Not this onion I'm chopping?
It's just so beautiful. Oh, yeah, nice, the onion.
Get a commercial auto insurance quote today at Geico.com and see how much you could save. Get more with Geico.
Welcome to Vegas World. It's time to party, and I'm your most excellent host, JC Vega. Thanking you all for tuning in. This past weekend was a busy, busy time for old JC. I was a part of Tampa Bay Pro's Sempre Vendetta show, where I was against my co-host Kanan Green in a six-man tag. The only thing I'm going to say about that match is my partners are dead weight. You're going to have to watch Fight to see what I mean. So be sure to check out Tampa Bay Pro Wrestling's social medias to figure out when that show's going up. Also, Kanan Green will be coming back on the next episode of Vegas World along with the Captain Aranova as we continue our journey through the Three Ninjas franchise, where we will do a watch-along with Three Ninjas Kickback. That is right. We're going to do a full-blown proper watch-along. Because last week's episode, if you listened, or if you're not aware, we did Three Ninjas. It was supposed to be a review slash discussion, but it morphed into a watch-along because I had it on the TV as we were recording, and we are all ADHD, so we're going to comment on what we see. So why not do it the proper way? That'll be a lot of fun, and I hope you join us for that, but let's get into today's topics. A couple of pieces of rumor and news out of Star Wars. One of them being that Ryan Gosling has been name-dropped to be a potential star for Sean Levy's film. That could be a whole lot of fun. Ryan Gosling is a phenomenal actor. Love him in The Nice Guys. He's freaking hilarious. He's a badass in Drive. Blade Runner 2049 is one of my favorite movies of all time, and Blade Runner is just one of my favorite movies ever. Fantastic. I know what I've said before about Ridley Scott, but that was him at his peak. The height of his powers. And, you know, he'll do great. On the flip side of that, I'm not looking forward to Natalie Portman being a part of Ahsoka Season 2. For the simple fact that I am just so sick of the Skywalkers and anything to do with the Skywalker saga. I get it. Ahsoka is a character from that time period. She was in the Clone Wars, and what she's been up to through the original trilogy and before the prequel trilogy, there's a lot up in the air, and like, this is cool. Rosario Dawson is a fantastic actress. Ahsoka is a great character. But season one was very lackluster for me. It left a lot to be desired, and maybe season two can turn it all around. But I don't know if Natalie Portman is the way to do it. And quite frankly, like, what is she going to add? I mean, her character's dead. I get it. They can do flashback or, you know, maybe there's some video hologram left or some sort of vital information that Ahsoka needs. I don't know. But I'm just, I get that Disney is trying to pick from the fruit of nostalgia and, you know, bleed it dry and for all it's worth. But I don't know if that'll keep fans interested to come back. I mean, Skeleton Crew, for all intents and purposes, seems like it's going to be canceled. The Acolyte is for sure canceled because it was torn to shreds by critics and fans alike. And some of the stars were not happy with the fan reception. In some ways, justifiable. Other ways, not. We're not going to get into all of that, however. You can look that up and make a decision for yourself. I don't feel like retreading all that. But the point being, Natalie Portman, she'll do great. But it's whatever for that news. Another piece of information, which kind of sucks in a way, is the fact that Ray Stevenson passed away in 2023. So his role as Balin Skull has been recasted. And Rory McCann, who played Sir Sandor, the Hound, in Game of Thrones, is going to take over the role. I know he'll do a fantastic job with that. Loved him as the Hound. So I'm curious to see what his take on this character will be and how different it might be or similar it could be to Ray Stevenson's portrayal of the character in season one. If that's one of the bright spots from season one was Stevenson's performance. So, you know, who knows? Robert Eggers has announced that he's got two projects coming up. One of them is for sure going to come out. It's going to come out Christmas Day in 2026, and it's going to be Werewolf. It's going to be an 18th century film with dialogue that is natural to that time period. I feel like this guy is just doing like a alternate take on the Universal monsters. I mean, Nosferatu, I get it, is pretty much a Timu Dracula, but a werewolf movie, come on, brother. Are you gonna do a Frankenstein's monster next? I'm kidding, but I know that'll be really, really good because Robert Eggers has done phenomenal work. I mean, I loved Nosferatu when I saw it. It was pretty great. But the thing that interests me the most is another project he's looking to get off the ground, and that is a remake of Labyrinth. David Bowie's Labyrinth. That, in the hands of Robert Eggers, could be very, very interesting to see what he does similar to the original 1986 movie and what he will do differently. I'm sure he'll put his creative stamp on it for sure, and you'll know it's a Robert Eggers movie, but I don't know. That's fascinating. I hope that gets made, because I'm in. I like The Labyrinth. Who doesn't like The Labyrinth? I mean, if you talk the 80s, that's gonna pop up. And I remember also, as a child, being very confused about David Bowie. Because, like, it looked like a man, but it had super long hair and dressed in spandex and all that. So I was confused. I don't know. That's a little anecdote there for you. It's this funny anecdote, because I remember vividly, as a kid, asking my cousins we were watching. I was like, is that a guy or is that a girl? And they were just like, it's a guy. I was like, you don't look like it. Over to someone who is for sure a girl, Millie Alcock. Her chair of the set of Supergirl Woman Tomorrow was posted by James Gunn. That movie is in production. She's going to have her first appearance in the Superman movie that's coming out this summer. That'll be pretty cool. I know Millie Alcock is a great actress, so she'll do a fantastic job. I'm not really a big fan of Superman, and I don't know all his lore, or Supergirl's lore for that matter, but I'm sure it'll be a good movie. Well, I hope it's a good movie. But with James Gunn overseeing the DC Cinematic Universe now. Is it they calling it DC Cinematic Universe? Is it DC Universe? I don't know. Whatever they're going to call it, I'm sure it's in good hands with James Gunn. He hasn't done a whole lot wrong as of late, so there you go with that. This past weekend, a teaser trailer for Alien Earth came out, and I gotta say, I'm interested. I was going to watch regardless, and I loved Alien Romulus. The franchise itself, I can appreciate a lot of the lore around it. I mean, the first two movies were cinematic masterpieces. The latter couple, not so much, until Fede Alvarez stepped up to the plate and knocked it out of the park. But they're teasing that a ship crash lands with an facehugger on board. So that could be potentially how the Weyland-Yutani Corporation figures out that the Xenomorphs exist and why they send the Nostromos out to get the specimens. Who knows? But I know Timothy Oliphant is starring in it, and it's coming out this summer, and I cannot be any more excited to see it. Also, Timothy Oliphant is a badass in Justified. And we are also a month away from Daredevil Born Again being released on Disney Plus, and this show is going to be rated TVMA. It's going to have the same rating as the Netflix show, and according to the showrunner, this reboot is going to be more of a New York crime story as opposed to the noir feel of the Daredevil series. He says, it has elements of The Sopranos and King of New York. There's a feeling of those classic 90s crime tales. It's a pace and scope that, for a lot of reasons, Netflix wasn't able to do. They were very dark cinematically, not necessarily story-wise, although there were some dark elements. We're much darker. With that, sir, first, you had my curiosity, but now you have my attention. I loved the Netflix Daredevil series. It sucked when it went away. The Defenders, it happened, but this I am so looking forward to, and I feel like I'm saying that a lot today. I'm looking forward to a lot of stuff, but this is going to be so good. I will be watching day one, hour one. Probably not that far. Let's not get ahead of ourselves here. It might be released at like midnight, but if I'm up and I see it up there, I'm going to start watching it. Regardless, I'm going to start watching it as soon as possible. So can't wait for that. And that's a big, bold proclamation. And I'm sure and I hope they deliver, because I want it to succeed. I want Marvel to be great again. That should be the new slogan. Make Marvel great again. Hashtag that. Make Marvel great again. Squid Game, the Korean thriller that took the entire world by storm, much to the surprise of the creator himself, because he felt the games were too Korean influenced, too niche for the rest of the world to possibly get or maybe identify with. But nonetheless, it was a runaway hit, so much of a hit that Netflix decided to let's make a game show based around the Squid Games, which defeats the entire purpose of what the show was trying to say. But hey, corporations are gonna corporations, and they're gonna squeeze an IP for all it's worth, because Stranger Things is in production on its last season, and they're gonna run out of that to give to the world, so you gotta go with the next best thing, right? Now, does Squid Games 2 live up to the expectations? Does it live up to the hype? Does it exceed the hype? Well, let's find out. Jung Ho, who won the games, had all this money, was ready to leave for America to be with his daughter, but he saw the salesman recruiting someone else to be a part of the game, and he didn't want that. And he didn't want to see more people die, so he decided to stick around, much to the chagrin of the front man, who said, hey, get on the plane, go. And he's like, nope. So he buys himself a motel. He gets a stockpile of guns. He's very paranoid. He's got cameras all around the building and outside, checking every angle, making sure that they're not coming for him. Jung Ho, the detective who's looking for his brother last season, only to find out that his brother is the front man for the Squid Games. He was shot and fell off a cliff, but he was found by a sailor. And ever since that day, he's helped him search for the island where he was found. Much to their disappointment, they can't find it. But eventually, Jung Ho comes across Gi-hun, and they team up to find the island and to get the game stopped. But the shadow cabal that runs these games are always one step ahead, you know, because Gi-hun's like, hey, put me back in the game. He has a tracker in his tooth. At least he thought he did, until the first game comes around and he realized the tracker is gone and they won't be able to find him. So he's got to play the game all over again. And of course, when he warns everybody that, hey, if you play this game, you are going to die, everyone dismisses him. They think he's crazy, or they think he's just trying to keep the money for himself because he's won before. And then a bee gets into the quarters and screws it all up. And that's when people start dropping. The one big reveal about this red light, green light game is I thought that because it was motion activated, that there were like automatic gun turrets scattered around the facility to shoot everybody. But no, we learned that it's actually the people in the triangle mask and squares shooting them with sniper rifles. Kind of disappointment, but I mean, it makes sense. You can only spend so much money on so much of that stuff, right? I mean, I'd imagine you got to kill off the engineers and everybody else and who helped get the games up and running in all those different floors or what have you. I don't know. But nonetheless, bodies start to drop. And then people take Gi-hun seriously. And of course, you know, he's like, I know what the next game is. And then the next game gets changed. But the big drama, at least to me, for the most part, doesn't come within the games itself. Although you are rooting for Gi-hun to make it out alive or figure out a way to get everybody to, you know, not die. And in this season and this round of Squid Games, they've given them a choice. After every game, they can vote to either continue or not, which was not the case in the previous season. They gave them one shot at that last time, and after that, they had to continue on until the games were completed. And that's an interesting caveat, and I'm pretty sure that was all because the front man knew he put Gihon in the games, and he wants to prove that you cannot change people until you change society. Otherwise, these people are going to continue to do this no matter how much Gihon tries. And the front man himself is in the games. He befriends Gihon, and you think he's going to sabotage him for the most part, but no, he befriends him, which all makes sense, I guess, in the grand scheme of things. When you want to lull your enemy into a false security, when you want to get them in the most unexpected times, that's how you do it. You befriend them. But it was really interesting to see that. At certain points, the front man seems like he's in the games with them, and like he's celebratory when things go right for some of the players. You know, it's really cool. It shows that maybe there's a bit of his humanity left. I mean, his wife passes away before the events of season one. She died of cancer, and then he was in the games, presumably, I guess, to try to help save her, and he loses her, and then he gets involved in that and graduates to being the front man. The craziest thing in this season was the further peek into the psyche of the salesman. That man is truly deranged. He makes the bookie and his, lackey play a demented game of rock, paper, scissors with Russian roulette. And, like, there's only one bullet in the chamber in the first round, and then after that, he's put five more rounds in there, and there's pretty good chance that you're gonna die. And it was wild, man. But, you know, the salesman meets up with Gihon at his motel, and they end up playing a game of Russian roulette. And in that, you know, the salesman details how he shot his father and he didn't feel a thing. And either you're strong or you're weak, and these people are basically trash. They're not even human necessarily. So these games are a favor to society, and it will cleanse the world of these people who are broke and practically homeless and contribute nothing to society, quote unquote. But Gihon lets him know that you are not one of them, sir. You are not the top brass. You are not the front man of the other people who watch the games. You are their lapdog, as proof that you are here pointing the gun at yourself instead of up there with them. And that's all you're ever going to be. So that was an interesting, wild scenario. I can't say that season two is better than season one, and I'm saying it's less than season one. It is very different, because you're not going to get the same shock value you did from the first season. But then again, the first season was based around the games, and like, maybe Gihon dies at some point, we follow somebody else, because they built up a lot of the other characters in that first season. And this season, hey, they might have pulled the twist out of their hat that, like, episode 3, Gihon dies, and we follow one of the other players, which guess might have could have happened, but that wouldn't have made a whole lot of sense, because, you know, you want to see Gihon succeed at breaking up Squid Games, or, you know, I guess fail tragically at the bitter end, or maybe his fate takes a different turn once it's all said and done. The final episode of this season was fantastic, the best of the 6 episodes that they released at this point. One character shows obvious PTSD, whether it's from breaking down and seeing all this death here, or their military background, probably more of their military background. If I had to put a definitive statement on that, probably that, and them choking at the final moments. What they do in that, I mean, Gihon gets twisted by the front man a little bit. They're playing this game, and one of the choices that Gihon makes, the front man questions. It's like, man, are you really wanting to do that? And Gihon's like, it's for the greater good, which kind of almost sounds like the front man's philosophy in a sense, in a twisted sense. And I'm sure Gihon doesn't necessarily see it that way, and he doesn't want to see people die. But in order for them to get to their objective at that point, it's got to be done. And that sucks. It's a Sophie's choice in that regard. I don't want to give too much away because, man, you got to watch it for yourself. But I will give it, if I had to give it a number rating, I'll give it a 4.5 out of 5. Really good. Really, really good stuff. We're all obsessed with something in the world, right? We all, like, for me, for example, I am obsessed with professional wrestling, so much so that I became a professional wrestler. We have friends who are super into Disney, that they go to Disney World almost every year, and they watch all these Disney movies. Or they're a big Harry Potter fan, or a Star Wars fan, so much so that they got a full-blown Mandalorian suit. We all have something that we are so passionate about, and sometimes you turn that into a hobby or a career, and you make it a creative outlet. And this is what we're going to talk about today. Fan films, people who have taken their time and effort into crafting something that will never make them money. I mean, realistically, they could parlay that into a full-blown film career in some way, but on that project right there, they're not going to make any money off of it. I've written plenty of stories about the Ninja Turtles and Power Rangers that I will never make money off of and will never see the light of day. But it's something that I was passionate about and I enjoyed doing. It's, you know, it's a lot of fun. And this is what this could be about. We're not knocking any of them, although there are some out there that are so bad it's good to watch. But we're not going to talk about those. We're going to talk about the ones that are really, really good, so good that you are going to question whether or not this person had a Hollywood studio backing them in order to make this. And it's a two-way street, I guess, to some people. Some people think, well, if you had all that time and effort, why didn't you make something original? And that's fair, I guess, in a sense. You could do that. But also, hey, man, it's something that they were so passionate about that they wanted to do, and they could. And they found the means to do it. And all the more power to them, because it gives us plenty of to enjoy that is sometimes even better than the quote-unquote official movies or TV shows. One that came out just recently by a group called Lost Utopia Films. It's called Shelter 54. It's a Godzilla found footage movie. And it details how, you know, Godzilla was around, and there's a lot of other monsters out there that world governments forged underground bunkers, and one of them experienced a tragedy that morphed into a different being entirely. It has body horror in it, and it's really crazy to see, and it's really disturbing, and it's pretty unique to Godzilla and the other kaiju monster that they use. I'm not gonna give that away. You gotta watch it. It's really crazy. It's wild, too, how much, like, Godzilla in this short looks like it has, like, $1 million budget behind it. But I don't know how much their budget was, but it's really, really fascinating and really cool. That's one you should definitely check out. Like I said, it came out, like, 2 months ago. I stumbled upon it after finding a bunch of analog horror, Jurassic Park stuff, and another Godzilla feature called Living with Monsters, and it's... That short is presented like a 1950s television show, almost like, I guess, maybe like a Twilight Zone or something to that effect. And it treats King Kong like it was a documentary, and that all the events, these other kaiju monster movies like Godzilla and stuff, happened legitimately, and like we're all having to live through it. Like, that presentation was really, really cool. And something different that I haven't seen. You don't get a whole lot of Godzilla fan films, because apparently Toho is very adamant about protecting their brand, even if it's fan films, because copyright laws in Japan are way different than America, but somehow these have slipped through. Hopefully they don't hear this and find those and shut those down. But those are really cool. You gotta watch those. If body horror is your thing, Shelter 54 is for you. If you want to see like the unique old-timey television show feel with this, with monsters, that one's for you. 1986, it's by the 80s Doubt Production. It's a YouTube channel, and 1986 is a Batman Punisher crossover. And that was really good. That Batman reminds me a lot of Frank Miller's interpretation of Batman, just the way that how the dude scowls when he's wearing the cowl and stuff. And the Joker performance in this movie is really good. Now, a lot of fan films try to do Joker and they try to have their like Heath Ledger moment, and it's just not very good. But this guy was really good, and he comes in to Psycho Killer. That was hilarious and wild that he's dancing to that song, and it's so fitting. And it's just the cinematography. They have a John Carpenter song in that short, which I have in my Spotify playlist, and I recognized it also from Dust Till Dawn, the series. That was really cool. And of course, the Punisher and Batman are gonna clash because Batman doesn't kill, the Punisher does. And just the way they set that up, so good. The fight sequences in this movie are tremendous. Another good one, The Sandman 24-Hour Diner. Now, there is a adaptation of that in the Netflix series, and this I think this yeah this short predates that. The YouTube channel is called Morpheus Streams, so you should watch it. It's really cool how they pretty much recreate the panels from the comic and how they break from live action footage to animation. The animation, my God, stellar. Again, they've had to have spent some money on this or like had some sort of angel investor to get that, and so good. Not really sure about how I feel about the dreams look in the final production, but I mean it's pretty close to the comic. You get what you get with that, and I understand why they did it the way they did. So that's another one. If you're a Sandman fan, I know being a Neil Gaiman fan's not something to be proud of right now, but aside from that, creator aside, how what that story is and how the Sandman re how I mean how that character's reinvented in the late 80s and 90s was really cool, and that was a really cool short that you should watch. Give it a I feel it's better than the Netflix adaptation of the 24-Hour Diner, just saying. That's my opinion and I'm sticking to it. Darth Maul, The Apprentice. That's a good one. It's 17 minutes long, and it's for the most part it's a big fight scene. I don't The actor's clearly not Ray Park, but he's got the fighting style down pat, and it's great martial arts. Fantastic. There's nothing bad I could say about that, and it's really cool to see that. That was one of the more well-made ones that I enjoyed, and I like Darth Maul as a character, dude. It's a shame we didn't get more of him in the movies. I know they got the Clone Wars, but come on, man. George Lucas, you shouldn't have killed him off, but that fan film, so good. So good to watch. Slice of Life. It is a Blade Runner fan film. It was made by guys from Croatia over the course of like 3 years. They handcrafted everything, built all the sets, painted it themselves, took a 3D printer to make miniatures for their cityscape. Just a lot of ingenuity with like little to no money. Like they made their sets in a guy's garage, and that also shows the power of filmmaking and what you can do to manipulate things to make it seem bigger than what it really is. So cool. Like I swear you could like take some of their stuff and drop it into a montage of Ridley Scott's Blade Runner, and you wouldn't know the difference. That's how good this was, and that's how much detail they put into crafting their sets and their costumes and all that. Just beautifully done, man. Amazing. If I had to say a top three, this would be up there for me as far as films go. You should watch it. Watch the movie, and then watch the behind the scenes and how much effort and hard work they put into it. Really cool. And you don't get a whole lot of Blade Runner fan films. I've seen like a couple, like maybe this 2 two that's probably as good in terms of quality. I mean, it's a lot of hard work to create like a future dystopia, right? Especially on no budget, but just tremendous work. The power of filmmaking and the ingenuity and creativity needed to do that. That's the beauty of film in general itself. Just what you can do with very minimal stuff. It's impressive. Go watch it. Stop this right now. Go watch it. Or when you know this podcast, go watch it. That's if there's one that I talk about today that you watch, I feel that's the one, especially if you are a Blade Runner fan like I am. Some fun animated goodies, one of them being Batman Broken Promise. It highlights the fall of Harvey Dent and who he is now as Two-Face. It features a ventriloquist. The action is pretty fluid. The animation style is fluid as well. Like, it's really, really good. I love how it kind of deals with the tragedy of Harvey Dent and just the overall darkness of Batman and his rogues gallery. And it's really neat how they capture Batman, like, sifting his way through this warehouse with all these goons. Really cool. One that really touches my heartstrings is Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles: The Last Ronin. It's a really poignant 4 or 5 minute short. It highlights the last turtle after a botched mission on trying to get revenge for his brother's death and his father, and now he's looking to join them in the afterlife. They use a song from the original movie where Raphael and Master Splinter are talking. Beautiful, beautiful touch that, and just again, the animation, the CGI. Wow, man. And really impressive, really good. A lot of emotion in this 4 or 5 minute short. So beautiful. I can't wait for the official Last Ronin movie to come out whenever that is. I hear it's still in the works, probably in pre-production. That'll be really cool, especially if it's rated R. But like, no, this short, it really captures the tone I want. And a lot of people have been saying that they want the turtle in that movie to look like the first movie suit design. That would be super dope. But again, off of this short alone, just this 4 or 5 minute scene, you feel the angst. It really, really brings a tear to my eye, especially because I'm a diehard Ninja Turtles fan. No shame in that. I don't care. Judge me all you want. But the last one, as far as the animation goes, is Legend, a Dragon Ball fan film. It focuses on Vegeta and a fight with Broly. In this version, he is the King of Saiyans. Planet Vegeta has not been blown up. You get Chi Chi and Goku fighting in the tournament. That was really cool. A little nod back to Dragon Ball when Chi Chi was promised by Goku when they were older that he would marry her, and he doesn't remember it, or, it's Goku. But really cool. It teased, I guess, possible appearance of Frieza in another short if they were ever to do one. Again, really good animation. The fight, top notch, because that's what you want, right? In a Dragon Ball short. It really captures the spirit of Toriyama's work. I thoroughly enjoyed that. The final one, and I am really, really sad that it's just a fan film and not something, at least for now, that we are not getting as far as like a professional or a big Hollywood budget movie. Small Soldiers: The War for Necron. Dude, like this, that was really cool. Like, I was a big fan of the Small Soldiers movie. I had a bunch of the toys. I played the games. I'm a little pissed off that the Gorgonites won in the end, but hey, I guess that just says more about me than it does the movie, possibly. But the concept behind the War of Necron, is one of the characters was part of the Commando Elite, and now they're this monster figure from like this weird space mutation. There's a whole lore, a backstory about this on Instagram. If you look up Small Soldiers War of Necron, you'll be sure to find it. But nah, it just looks so cool, man. It's just like you get a lot of emotion. There's no dialogue in it either, but you get a sense of sorrow from one character and anger and resentment from the other. And like, dude, if that would play out in a full-length movie, sign me up for it, because I loved the black humor of Small Soldiers, especially more now as an adult. Like, I mean, I didn't get most of it when I was like 10, but looking at it now, it's like the movie deserved so much more, man. But yeah, War of Necron, check that out. From comic books and sci-fi to Western, this one is another, I mean, they're all favorites of mine, but because I've been on a Western kick and I've played Red Dead Redemption at least twice now in the last year, Red Dead Redemption, Seth Gold. There's a sweet segment too where they do Deadeye, and it's tremendous. Love it. From comic books and old sci-fi movies to a Western video game, one of the best video games ever, Red Dead Redemption, Red Dead Redemption 2 especially. This short film is Red Dead Redemption Seth Gold. It captures the essence of the game to the T. Like, they even have a segment of Deadeye. It's great. And that's not something I don't think you'd get in a major motion picture. Really quality. Like, it's, again, like, the costume designing and the set location choices, they made it truly feel like Red Dead Redemption. And again, that's not something you're going to get from just a Hollywood producer or filmmaker, I don't think. I'd be surprised, but like, again, that's the beautiful thing about fan films, is the reverence and attention to details like that to capture that spirit for others who appreciate that stuff. But Seth's gold, man. Beautifully done. And after I got done watching it, it made me start playing the game again, because I'm on my second playthrough of the game. And in keeping with the theme of Hollywood refusing to give the fans what they want, or just not being capable to give the fans what they want, Batman Beyond Year One, written and directed by Michael Yu of Loomis Entertainment, starring Ryan Potter as Terry McGinnis. Ryan Potter is Hero in Big Hero 6, and he was Beast Boy in Titans. He plays a tremendous Terry McGinnis, and if there ever is to be a Batman Beyond on the big screen or in television, he deserves the first crack at it, or at least be in the conversation to be Terry McGinnis. Set design, tremendous. Like, they had a short window to get everything. They had like 3 sets made, and they had like a couple of days to get it done. However, they lost a day for whatever reason. I guess that's also the tragedy of movie making, is that things can go awry even with the best laid plans. But they managed to get it done right before shooting their first day, so that's cool. The wire work, top notch. Wouldn't expect it in a fan film, but they managed to do it. They had a top notch stunt team who went to work on it. Tremendous fight. I want more of that, man. I want a continuation of it. They need to give this guy everything to get this done. Warner Brothers needs to stop being little bitches. I'm just gonna say it like that, respectfully. Stop being little bitches. Give us Batman Beyond. But if you want that Batman Beyond appetite satiated, this is the short film for you. And also, dovetailing off of that, Uncharted, starring Nathan Fillion. Now, again, these last two are probably cheats in a sense, because it's people in Hollywood who made it. But again, the little to no budget, you know, and this Uncharted short came out before they announced the Tom Holland, Mark Wahlberg one, and definitely fits the theme and what the story was in the games. Nathan Fillion, it was everybody's choice to be Nathan Drake, and he's just funny, and he's just a great actor, man. Really cool. Also, it was neat to see Ernie Reyes Jr. in the short as El Tigre. So funny. Wasn't expecting it. And it's funnier the fact that Nathan Fillion, like, scoffs at him when he enters, because, like, you know, they built up El Tigre as maybe this big old muscle-bound dude, and it's Ernie Reyes Jr., but Ernie Reyes packs a punch. You would know if you've watched Surf Ninjas, Secret of the Ooze, or even seen his kickboxing career. You know, in saying all that, it's interesting how certain people who are in the quote-unquote Hollywood system either have to do this because no one else will, or just to flex their muscle and because they're passionate about it. Dan Trachtenberg, who directed 10 Cloverfield Lane, Prey, he had a Portal fan film. It was called Portal No Escape. Really good stuff. It almost feels like he used the same set that he used for 10 Cloverfield Lane to shoot that Portal short film. Maybe. I could be wrong. But it looked eerily similar to Mary Winstead's character's room in 10 Cloverfield Lane. But that's really cool. Last couple ones. Adi Shankar's bootleg universe. Adi Shankar, he's the showrunner for Castlevania, Captain Laserhawk. He produced Killing Them Softly, The Grey, Dread. He produced a Mr. Rogers short that showed Mr. Rogers as a army veteran, The Last Days of Pokemon, and showed like how graphic that would be realistically. Obviously, the Power Rangers short, directed by Joseph Kahn, who directed tons of music videos, and famously Torque, the motorbike Fast and Furious movie. That short got a lot of controversy from Power Rangers fans because of how dark and gritty it was. And Addy claims that it was somewhat of a satire on how Hollywood has to do dark and gritty reboots. Plus, he feels it's wild that, you know, this intergalactic being chose children, essentially, to fight this intergalactic war. And when you put it like that, yeah, it puts a dark twist on it. But I also do not believe that Adi Shankar, as a little kid, I want to know how old you really were when that thought hit you, man, because ain't no way you were like 4 or 5 thinking about child soldiers or even knew what the concept of child soldiers were. But nonetheless, that short is really cool. Katie Sackhoff is in it as Kimberly. James Vanderbeek is Rocky, and he also helped write the short as well. That was pretty cool. Like, I know it's supposed to be a satire, but man, if they legitimately did a Power Rangers movie like that, in a sense, in terms of the action, I guess, not so much as like the vulgarity and like Bulk and Skull being drug dealers, I can deal without that, but like maybe a more gritty tone, I would not be opposed to it. But again, you know, it's just me. Maybe I'm just a cynic like that. I would deal with a Marvel-esque style Power Rangers movie. Just give me something like that, though. Give me the suits styled like that, how they had in the short. But, you know, again, a couple of notable actors in this short. Really good. Laundry Day, which is a Punisher short film where Thomas Jane reprises his role as Frank Castle. Ron Perlman's in it, too, for a brief bit. Really graphic, as a Punisher movie should be. But it was really cool to see Thomas Jane get another crack at the character, because let's be honest, that 2004 movie wasn't really that good. Though this fight scene with Kevin Nash was super cool, and you know, Kevin Nash took a legitimate knife to the, you know, chest or shoulder. that's wild to hear that story, dude, how he actually got hit with a knife and he null sold it and all he asked for was beer. But in terms of the short, quality stuff. Again, we're kind of cheating a little bit, I guess, maybe because it's Hollywood people involved, but again, with little to no budget, it's really cool, and it's something, it's a crowd pleaser, and you can't ask for more than that. Power Rangers is definitely my favorite one. Again, I guess I'm probably biased because I'm a Power Rangers Mark, as Nova would say. I hate using wrestling terms in non-wrestling situations. I don't know why I did it here. But anyway, that about covers it for this week. Be sure to check those out. Be sure to follow Vegas World at Vegas World Pod on Instagram. Follow me at the JC Vega. If you want to support me and my wrestling and this show, go to ProWrestlingTees.com. Look up JC Vega and get one of your shirts today. because you look pretty cool wearing it, and it doesn't look like a wrestling shirt. And who wants to have a silly wrestling shirt? You want a cool shirt. It's a wrestling shirt, but it's a cool shirt. All right, guys, we'll see you next time when we have a Three Ninjas kickback watch along. Take care and party on.